This is episode 342 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, July the 25th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Last week saw the end of an era as the space shuttle Atlantis touched down at Cape Canaveral in Florida for the very last time, 42 years after Neil Armstrong became the first person to set foot on the moon.
Mission complete, Houston. After serving the world for over 30 years, the space shuttle turned its place in history. It's come to a final stop.
50-year-old commander Chris Ferguson brought Atlantis back from its last mission into space and reflected on the achievements of Americans in space.
We got to take the ride. We sure hope that everybody who has ever worked or touched or looked at or envied or admired a space shuttle was able to take just a little part of the journey with us.
Even NASA was sentimental about the last shuttle mission.
Fired the imagination of a generation, a ship like no other, its place in history secured, the space shuttle pulls into port for the last time, its voyage at an end.
Shuttle launch director Michael Lineback took time out to reflect on what had been.
There were good emotions that we brought the crew home safely and the mission's complete. Certainly sadness that it's over and people will be moving on and I hate to see them leave, but that's a reality. I saw grown men and grown women crying today. Tears of joy, to be sure. And that was just human emotions came out on the runway today, and you couldn't suppress them.
The shuttle and its four-member crew touched down at Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral at 5:56 a.m. local time, ending an era of human space exploration for the United States and leaving Russia as the world's only taxi to the International Space Station. Atlantis drove back into Earth's atmosphere at an altitude of 122,000 metres, plunging through temperatures of up to 137 degrees Celsius at about 25 times the speed of sound. After 135 missions, the American shuttle program is now over, and it's a time of mixed emotions for the close-knit NASA community, with the workforce reeling from thousands of job losses. The space shuttle program has certainly had its ups and downs, jubilation and tragedy. But 30 years on, now with tight budgets and the American economy in dire straits, the US President Barack Obama has ordered the agency to focus its resources on sending people to an asteroid by 2015 and to Mars by 2030.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The space shuttle returns to Earth for the final time. So what now for NASA? Internode are the first to release pricing for access to the national broadband network. Apple rolls out new MacBook Airs, and we look at the performance of the new Mac Mini. Google continues its cleanup with Labs and Firefox deleted. The price of 3D TV seem to be falling, and Adam is still living the media center dream. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Internode announces NBN pricing. Apple releases its latest OS X operating system. Microsoft announces a record fourth quarter revenue of over $17 billion. And NASA's space shuttle Atlantis lands safely at Cape Canaveral, bringing the 30-year space shuttle project to an end. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Internode last week unveiled pricing for its internet and telephone plans on Australia's fledgling national broadband network. Internode will charge customers anywhere from from $60 a month for an internet and phone package on the NBN. High-speed connections of 100 megabits per second down and 40 megabits per second up will cost about $100 a month with a 30 gigabyte quota. The most expensive high-speed plan will be just under $190 a month for 1 terabyte of data at 100 megabits per second down. But the managing director of Australian ISP Internode says a decision by the ACCC to increase the number of NBN connection points will mean higher prices for customers. Mr. Simon Hackett said last week that the previously anticipated 7 capital city interconnects, where Internode has existing fibre connections, has now been increased to 121, and that the network would be proportionally more expensive to connect to. Here's Mr. Hackett on ABC Radio.
The more people download, the more we have to pay NBN Co. Effectively, there's a download-related tax built into the network cost. So the more people download, the more expensive it is for us, and therefore the more we have to charge consumers. That cost is actually artificial. It doesn't cost the network any more to download more data.
Communications Minister, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, said he too was disappointed with the ACCC's decision to increase the number of connection points, but that ultimately competition would drive prices down. Apple has released the latest incarnation of its operating system, OS X. Codenamed Lion, the operating system for desktops and laptops, was last updated 2 years ago with the release of Snow Leopard. Lion now has more than 250 new features, some of which significantly change the way users work with the operating system. Launchpad is a new feature that displays all the Mac's applications on an iPad-style grid, and Apple has also made improvements to auto-saving, resuming and restoring documents, and opening applications in full screen. AirDrop is another new feature that allows two Macs to create a private Wi-Fi network so files can be moved from one machine to the other. There are more than 250 new features in Lion, and Apple announced on Thursday it had sold more than 1 million copies of Lion on its first day of availability. Lion is the first version of Apple's OS X to be offered as a digital download through the Mac App Store for just under $30. Microsoft announced last week a record fourth quarter revenue of $17.37 billion for the quarter ending on the 30th of June. While analysts were expecting Microsoft to post earnings of 58 cents per share, the software juggernaut announced earnings of 69 cents per share, an increase of 35% from last year. The announcement translates to $5.87 billion net income in Q4, with revenue heavily invested in the Windows operating system. Microsoft Office saw a 7% increase in the quarter, despite a lackluster global PC market. Microsoft also shipped 1.7 million Xboxes during the quarter. Xbox 360 platform revenue grew $293 million, or 29%, led by higher Xbox Live revenue and increased volumes of Xbox 360 consoles. And Atlantis has landed safely at Cape Canaveral in Florida, bringing NASA's 30-year space shuttle project to a close.
Atlantis, Houston, we are 2 minutes from a 10-minute gap, followed by 15 minutes of ratty calm. We'll get you back solid at 21:55.
After 135 missions, NASA's Space Transportation System, or STS, space shuttles have travelled more than 537 million miles, made some 21,000 orbits of the Earth, and spent over 1,300 days in space. Here's STS-135 Shuttle Commander Chris Ferguson after touching down at Cape Canaveral.
Mission complete, Houston. After serving the world for over 30 years, the space shuttle's earned its place in history and come to a final stop.
Design and construction of the space shuttle began in the early 1970s and was the first operational orbital spacecraft designed for reuse. Space Shuttle Columbia flew its first orbital test flight on the 12th of April in 1981, which was designated STS-1. The first operational flight of Space Shuttle Columbia was STS-5 on the 11th of November 1981. But the program was not without its failures. In 1986, 7 astronauts died after the Space Shuttle Challenger disintegrated just over a minute after takeoff, a catastrophic disaster which was attributed to the failure of an O-ring seal in a rocket booster. The program was put on hold for nearly 3 years while the failure was investigated. Then in 2003, Space Shuttle Columbia disintegrated over Texas during re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere, again resulting in the death of all 7 crew members. This disaster was caused by a piece of foam insulation, which came loose and struck the left wing of the shuttle during launch. But despite these setbacks, the space shuttle program has been hailed as a resounding success, and there's no question of the invaluable contribution it's made to projects like the Hubble Space Telescope, as well as construction of the International Space Station. STS Mission 135 Launch Director, Mr. Michael Lineback, on ABC Radio last week.
There were good emotions that we brought the crew home safely and the mission's complete. Certainly sadness that it's over and people will be moving on, and I hate to see them leave, but that's a reality. I saw grown men and grown women crying today. Tears of joy, to be sure. And that was just human emotions came out on the runway today, and you couldn't suppress them.
The President of the United States, Mr. Barack Obama, has now asked NASA to concentrate on sending humans to an asteroid by 2015 and then the first manned space mission to another planet, Mars, by 2030. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk a bit about Twitter, shall we? Woohoo, or as Lena would say.
Woohoo!
It's much more fun to get a little relay and a 9-volt battery.
Oh, here we go. The R18 vote has been pushed back again.
Corrupted a lot of people since you've come on board.
I've made them better.
Damo the Geek says, bring back net meeting.
Oh, I remember getting that through a firewall? That was hell.
Who uses SMS anymore? We've all got smartphones with email and Twitter and all sorts of things on it.
A day off for a long weekend is when a hammock really proves its value.
They have a blacklist. And you were on their Telstra blacklist.
I'm on a Telstra blacklist?
Did you sort that out?
No.
Okay.
No.
It was a tumultuous time, really, because
Dr. Ron knows a lot of geeks.
It's a bit like a chess game in cyberspace. You have to think about it.
It's that noise. Do-do-ding. Do-do-ding.
Yeah, it drives you crazy.
Oh, I'd love it. Yeah. I would love it.
That was my colleague emailing me what he thinks is the fix for my Exchange server, too.
Mike, oh, he said the word!
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show.
This week's show.
This week's show.
Yeah, this week's edition.
Well, yes. Come and join us in the chat if you'd like, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You can do that whenever we're live on the radio, which is now, if you're listening to us now. If not, you can't. If you're on the pod, doesn't work. Lena, well-travelled. Hi.
Adelina.
Adelina.
Yep. Adelina, I'm back. Made it.
You've been, came back today. You just got off a plane, did you?
I did. I landed at about 4 o'clock.
Did you?
Mm.
Good. And how was it?
You've, fantastic.
Where have you been? Tell everybody where
I
you've
went
been. You did tell us last week, but
AVCON.
Tell us again. AVCON.
AVCON. AVCON. They're very adamant that you say AVCON.
But it's said AVCON last week.
I know, but and they told me off when I said it.
Oh, you got in the trouble.
Yeah. Did they don't want people thinking it's audiovisual. They want it to be known as AVCON.
AV being?
Like AVGAS.
Yes.
Plenty of that around the airport.
It's anime and video games. So, yeah, that was
anime, video games.
Anime and video games.
That'd be a bit of a tongue twister, hence the acronym.
Yeah, AVCON. But no, it was fantastic.
What did you learn?
Lots of fun. I learned lots of different things.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, you can tell us all about it in your bit down the rest of the show down there. Oh, good. And also joining us this evening, coming in on the bench, as he has so kindly done this evening, Mark Diggins, no stranger to this microphone. How are you going, Mark?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Oh, look, it's been interesting. It's been a while since you've been in. This is about the second time since you've been back from the States.
It is, yes. I've been all busy with work and travelling interstate and around the world and stuff.
Around the world?
I had to spend some time in Bangladesh, a week in Bangladesh for work, so it has been a busy time.
Bangladesh?
Mm-hmm.
How come? Are you working for UNICEF now?
No. They had some problems with their mobile phone network. So
you contract out at that high level now, do you?
When someone else can't, yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Next.
That's good. Well, just hang around here. You might be needed fairly shortly the way things are going. But anyway, lots of news this week. Dr. Ron, hasn't there been the shuttle?
Lots of news. Lots of news. The space shuttle program has come to an end.
That's finished.
Very, very sad, isn't it?
It's kaput. Yes, it is rather sad, actually.
Watch it land?
No.
Oh, I tweeted about 3 minutes before touchdown. I said, you should be watching NASA TV.
I've been very busy in my professional life.
I know you have.
Like Mark has, so it's been a bit tricky to do anything other than nose down, tail up.
And you've been travelling interstate as well, like Adelina.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had the E-Ride on Qantas, though. Like, you know, the E-Ride at Disneyland, you know, the Space Mountain one, which is really fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I had one with Qantas the other day because it was Sydney weather. And if you've ever flown into Sydney weather, you'll know exactly. You hang on to anything you can.
Don't tell me that. I've got to be there on Wednesday for
the really?
Day.
Yeah. Oh, they had a biblical experience up there the other day. 40 days of rain and wind and sleet. 40 days and 40 nights. But it happened all in the day I was there.
Oh, okay.
Because I went up for SMPTE, which is the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers shindig that they had on at Darling Harbour. And, the planes were all running late because of the weather. And we flew into Sydney via Brisbane, I think. We went all the way up over the Hawkesbury River and then did a big U-ey and came back down. And it was a rough and tumbly old ride into Sydney. And has anyone seen on the internet the it hit the international media about the winds in Sydney and the waterfalls that have been blowing up into the air? There's fantastic video on YouTube of what's been showing on around the traps of waterfalls that go, they cascade over the edge and then they blow straight back up again and no water hits the actual ocean.
Where were these waterfalls? In Sydney?
Yeah. Yeah, but then again, I did get onto the aeroplane and there was literally a couple of centimetres of water on the tarmac. So there was a good bow wave as they bagged up the aircraft and, the water goes from vertical to horizontal on the wind and you sort of hang on to dear life as you get up and the pilot comes on and says, this is going to be a rough ride, so hang on. Well, not quite in those words, Qantas, but, professionally speaking.
And wasn't it good seeing that space shuttle land at, I guess it was Kennedy Space Center.
Oh, it was Cape Canaveral?
Cape Canaveral.
Yep, they had good weather.
And, and you see it laying in the dark. I don't know if that's their inverted, was it infrared camera?
Yeah, thermal camera.
And it's just like a bit eerie. And it was a good
Did you watch it, Mark?
Not live, but no. I did see the replay of it. And I'm thinking, I've been there. I've been to that. I've had the bus trip right to that, runway sort of thing.
Yeah. I've seen your pictures up on YouTube or Google or one of those things. Mm-hmm. Facebook, actually, it was. I think you sent all those sort of things up there. No, I was pretty I've got one question about technology in space.
Ask.
I don't know whether someone here can answer me.
I don't know whether we can or not.
In this, the space shuttle's been going and the space thing's been going for 40-odd years, okay? And technology has sort of come leaps and bounds in that period of time. But my question is this. Why does communications from the space shuttle to planet Earth in 2011 sound like it's 1969?
Hard one to answer. We should, it should be all digital and we should be
It should be like
clear,
what we're talking
it?
Now.
It should be like what we're talking now. Yeah, nice wide band, clear hi-fi communications.
Yeah.
But it's narrow band, tinny telephone sounding audio, isn't it?
It's vintage, classic 1969, Armstrong on the moon type sort of audio.
It does give you an indication of how old the space shuttles are. Would you just go and replace the radios to digital ones when, you're going to take them out of service?
Mm.
Maybe you just leave the ones in there the next
version. Does the job.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the money's better used elsewhere, don't you think?
A lot of that equipment was
debt.
A lot of that was designed in the 1970s. The technology in those space shuttles.
Yeah.
Because the first test flights were flown in the very early 80s, like 1980 and 1981. So a lot of the development was done years and years before that. So it might just be that, as Lynn is saying and as Mark's saying, just old technology and they've just stuck with it, tried and true.
Mm.
Graham's sick, but he's yelling at us in the chat saying, no, they should not use digital.
He is. He's here in spirit, isn't
there
he?
There are many exclamation points.
The phone will ring in a minute. We'll have to put him to air.
I'm surprised Graham's not saying CW.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Morse code.
CW, continuous wave, all the Morse code stuff.
Graham's saying analog works. That's very true. There's not a lot that can go wrong with analog radio, but if you have digital radio, it just introduces another level of complexity. And that might be why they've avoided going digital for so long.
Yeah, but you can still have better quality sound on radio than potentially, hear the static. When you did your news, you could hear that the lovely, typical space sounding audio background. When they were chatting, I just think
It's an atmosphere thing. Maybe it makes it seem like they're further away when there's lots of static.
Oh, so it's for effect, is it?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's a creative decision.
Just the air conditioning in the background or something.
Yeah,
they do use satellites though. They use a number of different satellite bands.
That's the reason. Maybe it's going through a few things. Someone will know. GD out there.
It has to be compatible with the existing satellite technology.
Satellites they're putting up there, though, fantastic.
How come I can see clearly from one side of the world to the other in high-definition digital television with 5.1 surround sound?
Oh, I don't know.
Dr. Ron?
Oh, I don't know.
It's all a conspiracy theory. You said it was all smoke and mirrors.
It is all smoke and mirrors. The images were good, though, Mark, weren't they, with the shuttle landing. And I couldn't help but thinking, if only they'd postponed the landing for another couple of hours, it would have been in daylight. It looked terrific as the sun came up.
Yeah, there's that backlit photo on the NASA site where it actually, the swirls of frozen air off the back of the wings.
Oh, it looked great. But obviously they had a very particular window at that very particular moment in time and they decided to take it.
So what are they going to do with the space shuttles now? How many have they actually physically got intact,
I think there's 4 or 5. I'm not sure off the top of my head. But they're going into museums.
Okay, and I thought they were down to 3, the final 3.
Well, it might be. I'll have to...
I'm just wondering what they're going to do with them. But it makes good sense that they're going to museums.
Someone in the chat will tell us.
But are they going to keep one just handy in case?
For funsies.
Well, you never know what might happen.
What, we just need to chuck one up in the air?
Well, no, Barack might get a few more shekels, if they don't hit their legal ceiling of debt in the United States. Yeah. And if push comes to shove and they have to get something up there fairly quickly for the guys in the space station, well, wouldn't it pay just to keep one on the end of the runway for just a little bit longer?
We're going to be relying on the Russian space program now to get people and equipment to and from the International Space Station. And those, is it the Soyuz craft?
Is that a bad thing?
I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing.
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're any worse in their
The Ruskies
phase.
Were there first. Remember Sputnik?
Yeah. Sputnik. Well, not personally, but I remember that hearing about it.
That made headlines in newspapers around the world with that technology when it went up there. Then they sent up a monkey, didn't they? The first monkey in space was before the human predecessor.
Yeah, and there was a dog at some stage.
There was
as well.
A dog?
Spot.
Was it?
I don't know.
No, I don't know either.
What was the first being in space? Was it like an ant?
That was a Russian cosmonaut.
Not human, like the first alive thing.
Oh, yeah, it was a monkey.
It was a monkey.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought it was an
Michael
ant
Jackson's
or a bug
monkey.
Or a fly or a cockroach or something. Something small.
No. Could have been. Stowaway, you're thinking.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Didn't know what it got
unintentional
itself into.
Unintentional being.
Dr. Carl on the ABC says that the first
The
first man-made object in space was a concrete, like drain cover.
Really? Why would that be the point?
Because it was something to do, I'm trying to remember now, I'm not reading this, it's just off the top of my head. They were, the Americans were doing nuclear tests, like back in the late 40s or early 50s, and they buried this heap of, all these explosives and this big nuclear bomb, and then they covered it with this massive concrete, thing, and then exploded it, and the concrete cover went flying off into space, actually went to orbit.
And unintentionally went
into orbit. It was highly unintentional, yes.
Yeah. Graham makes a good point that it would be way too expensive just to have one sitting on the shelf ready to fly.
It'd be incredibly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And then they've got all their big rocket booster things. They're massive. I wonder what they're going to do with those. Probably end up on the end of the runway, I think, don't they have a museum actually? I'm sure they do have a museum over there. I've never been there. Mark, you've been there. Has they got a museum of all...
Yeah.
Spacey bits of things that have been up and come back?
Yeah, that's more in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You get to see parts of it. But yeah, they do have parts. And you've got a space shuttle you can walk sort of through and have a look at, full-size one, and the like. So there's a lot of good stuff there, but there's more interaction, even sort of rides that you can go on, or simulators, I should say, of a space shuttle launch, which is pretty spectacular and great to go on.
Oh, they've got a simulator. Well, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There'd be queues for that, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's why you get there first thing in the morning.
Oh. I was right. GC said fruit flies were the first animals in space. It was a bug.
This is incredible. We're actually doing a radio show.
Long distance.
With Graham, who's literally, 10 minutes down the road, but he's in the chat.
He's on his deathbed.
He's on his deathbed, but he's sitting up there. I could just picture him. He's got the hot toddy next to him. He's got the telly going with the volume down. He'll be watching Star Trek.
All the way up with the laptop on the...
That's it. Yeah.
Overheating with the air cooling.
Yeah.
Scotch and dry on the bedside table.
Oh, yes, please.
And then he'll be swearing and cursing at us.
I might go join him. See you guys.
Okay, lucky night, Graham. Alrighty.
Mark was right. There are four shuttles remaining. Atlantis, this is from Wikipedia, of all things Wikipedia. Atlantis, which is the one that just landed, will be on display at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex.
Stay there. They could drag it out if they really needed it.
At Cape Canaveral.
Yep.
Discovery will be delivered to the Udvar Hazy Center of the Smithsonian Institution's National Air and Space Museum in Virginia. Near Washington, D.C. Is it the one you were talking about, Mark? The Smithsonian?
Smithsonian. The Air and Space Museum is fantastic. If you ever get a chance to go there, must do.
All right, so Discovery will be there. That's where Discovery will live.
That's where Amelia Earhart's aeroplane is, isn't it?
Yep.
I remember that. Yes, because I remember watching that movie with Adam Samuel. What's his name? I can't think of his name.
Endeavour will be delivered to the California Space Center in Los Angeles. And Enterprise, which was atmospheric test orbiter. They did a lot of tests. Like, I think STS-1... The very first shuttle flight, the test flight, I think that was Space Shuttle Enterprise, I think. Currently on display, so it's been on display for a while.
That's the one I probably walked through.
Oh, okay, at the National Air and Space Museum, yeah. So in New York City.
Oh, okay, no, it wasn't the one then.
That wasn't the one.
So there you go.
There's three working ones that are still around and they're going to distribute them.
Atlantis, Discovery and Endeavour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good.
Certainly the end of an era. I remember when the first one took off.
Do you?
Yeah.
Back in the late 70s, was that when it was?
81.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. And they had two tragedies during the course of the cycle.
Yeah, they did.
So not without its ups and downs, really, the whole sort of program. But at the end of the day, I think humanity's a tad better off for it. And I remember I was looking at some of the pictures that were around on Twitter because who was it, one of the space astronauts? And I'm trying to think of what his Twitter name was. You put me onto him, I think.
Astronaut Ron.
Astro Ron. That's right, Astro Ron, like
is that
as an Astro
ego?
Boy.
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah, well, Astro Ron was tweeting back some very nice, incredibly high-resolution happy snaps.
Ooh.
From 120-odd thousand metres above the planet, which was very good. And it actually made it look a lot more, you know, more high-def than high-def. So it actually was quite a good, and it was sharp and crisp. And because there's no dust or haze up there, that just looked absolutely fantastic across, you know, just goes to show how sort of... I know, fragile our little blue-green planet is down there when they're above all of that sort of stuff. So it was really good. Go and have a look. If he's still on Twitter, just add him to your friends and have a look at some of his pictures on TwitPic. They're absolutely amazing.
Scroll back through some of these photographs. Yeah. So 135 missions.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
And why do you reckon the public lost interest? When I say the public, obviously the diehards out there were keen on every launch and every landing. But it sort of faded out of the news. It was there were other things happening in the world, and it sort of disappeared, and now it's all of a sudden it's come back to a vengeance. So it's well and truly in the scheme of things now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Did you reckon the public lost interest? Maybe their interest sort of waned a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. It's yeah, I agree with you. It waned a little bit because it just became pedestrian. It became, you know,
it's so common that everyone's another
one a month and there's another one, yeah, and then suddenly there's an accident or a tragedy and the interest picks up
That's
again.
That's when it becomes newsworthy again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think when there was the tragedy as well, people started questioning why we're doing it. You know, why are we risking lives and why are we, you know, people who don't know the technical things, why they're going up there, probably think, why are we bothering? You know, we know there's a moon. We've been there. Let's move on.
Elroy in our chat room says the public lost interest in the Apollo missions. We have very short attention spans.
That's very true, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I think they showed that in a bit of that Apollo 13 movie as well, that they were losing interest and then they...
Then
you know,
suddenly there was an emergency
yeah,
and
the whole
press...
country got behind them. And,
but did they lose interest or were they distracted in other world affairs? Because, you know, something else would pop up and everyone sort of... Yeah,
they didn't
look away.
They just showed that there was a lack of interest in that movie.
So. All right, Barack Obama wants people to go to the asteroids and to Mars. Has he got an asteroid in mind? Does he know something we don't? He's been speaking to Bruce Willis lately.
What was that awful movie?
Armageddon.
Was it Armageddon? No, they landed on an asteroid and they blew it up.
I thought it was... Yeah, wasn't
total Armageddon, like that movie Deep Impact.
Deep Impact. No, that was the one. No, I think it was Armageddon, the one where
they did blow up.
They drill in and...
They flew up on... Yeah.
That's it. That was a bit far-fetched, wasn't it?
It was.
Loads of smithereens and then all those raining pieces come down on
so
the
is that, that's it. But is that what Barack Obama's keen for us to do? He wants Americans to fly to an asteroid?
He wants them to go to Mars, as I heard.
That was one of the other ones, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if going to an asteroid is a step on the way to Mars, you know, to prove the technology. I'm not sure.
Well, that's what Mr. Obama wants. He's told NASA to concentrate sending humans to an asteroid by 2015.
So that's not far off.
Within the next 4 years. And then he wants the first manned space mission to Mars by 2030.
Yeah.
That'll be amazing to see 2030.
If we all live that long, yes.
Oh, I think we will. When a human steps foot on another planet for the first time, that will just be an incredible moment.
It will. It will. Either very hot or very cold, unless they pick their timing on Mars.
Yep, very cold, I expect.
Yeah,
and imagine how long it takes the radio signals to travel between Earth and Mars. I'm putting Mark on the spot here. He's a radio person from way back.
Is it
hours and hours?
Hours, but I can't remember how many. Graham will tell us, I'm sure.
Graham, putting Graham on the spot in the chat room.
Ringing his bell every now and then.
Graham, maybe it's not hours. Graham. Maybe it's 15 minutes. Maybe I'm getting confused.
No, I reckon it's hours.
Okay, we'll find out in a minute.
All right. Yes, we will. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
How's your Google Plus going, Dr. Ron? We had fun on... what did we do last night?
We hung out.
We did...
You know?
Something wrong with the way you say that. What are you doing? Hanging out?
Just
what are you
out.
Hanging out? No, we did. We hung out.
Yeah, just hung out.
The past tense of hanging out is hung out.
We hung out.
Hunged out.
Hunged out.
And you said, how do I hang out with you, Doctor?
You made me get a video camera out.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did. That was quite funny. And then Mike came down in the top of the picture.
Oh, no, let's not go there. It was like Norman Neumann from
Exactly what it was like. It was very funny. If you click on, like, create a hangout in Google+, you'll see the person that's created it. It'll appear in your timeline. It'll say, you know, Andrew McComb created a hangout, and it gives you a button that says, hang out with this person.
Yeah, but you can selectively send it only to a few
circles. Circle or combination of circles you desire.
Which is very good. I wonder if someone's tried hanging out in public. That could be really bad.
I don't know if you can.
Is it like chat roulette?
It is. It's exactly what it would be like if it's allowed. I don't know if you can or not. I'm not game to try to get on this netbook because it brought it to a grinding halt last time I tried to use Google+.
Yeah, since we tried doing a chat on the radio show a couple of weeks back, it is limited to 10 chats, 10 users all talking at the one time.
10 participants.
Yes, but we did need a third participant last night. It would have been good because I wanted to see firsthand how allegedly it swaps the images around when you chat. So like if all four of us were chatting on the Hangout now, whoever spoke, the intelligence or the smarts in it would actually switch to the big picture of whoever was speaking. I haven't seen that yet because it was just you last night, Dr. Ron.
Yeah, we'll have to try it.
Yeah,
give it a go.
There wasn't anyone around at 1 o'clock in the morning when we were doing those sort of things.
No.
You do your best wilfing, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely, it is.
I was up, but I was not near a computer.
No.
I was celebrating at the after party. But it was fun.
Have you sobered up yet?
Yes.
Yeah, you have actually.
I have.
Yeah, it's good. A bit of fresh Melbourne air would do that for you, I would have thought.
I had a good walk to the long-term car park at Melbourne Airport.
Did you?
Hit the spot.
That's a long walk.
Instead of taking the little orange bus, you chose to walk.
Yep.
Oh, good girl. That would have been sobering.
It was very sobering.
Could have been taking a life.
It could have gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Especially at the level crossing or the street crossing where you walk across there and Melbourne drivers. My goodness, I'm lucky you're here tonight. Anyway, at least you had daylight on your side. Google, the population in Google Plus land hit 20 million. Not bad for a social network which has been running just shy of a month, about 3.5 weeks now. It started on the 1st of this month.
So we've only got about 730 million to go to pick up to Facebook.
Zucker's got 750 thereabouts.
Something like that, 750.
So, Eric's got a bit to go. Oh, he's not there anymore, is he? Who's CEO? Marissa, maybe. Oh, I'm showing my age. I should read up. I don't know who's...
Yeah, Eric left.
He did.
Are you on Google Plus, Mark?
Yes. You're my only friend.
Oh, that's nice. I feel privileged.
I don't know how it works.
We'll find you some more friends. Hang in there.
Yeah, and I think I only posted once. I don't know if you saw that, but that was like 2 days ago or something.
Yeah, so I did. I did see that.
That was the first post.
It was a family-type post. It was a family-type one?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That was a Harry Potter post.
Yeah, that's right. We should hang out.
Yeah, it was one of those things... As they say at work, you know, when you need to have a conference, you say, let's get a room. meeting room.
That's right. Let's get a room.
That's right. We went to see Harry Potter 7.2 for the second time because the first time we only got to about 30 minutes before the end and my son threw up, so we ended up leaving the building.
So you didn't find out how it all ended the first time
around.
Exactly.
Oh,
so you had to go back for more.
Again, yeah. You're not eating anything this time.
was it because of the 3D?
I was about to say, was it?
No.
Was it,
no, he just overindulged, I think.
Right.
One too many choc tops.
Yes.
Oh,
like
no.
We've all been there.
It could have been anything, but anyway. Yep, it was good.
Bad luck was in the cinema. Oh. Anyway.
Oh, good.
So, you can come hang out with Ron because, and befriend a few more people and things like that. But, 20 million. You're one in 20 million at the moment. So, after 3 weeks' worth of Google+. And I think they had a few... Well, there's some things going around the news and the Twitterverse and stuff like that about some people having their accounts deleted and things like that. So don't know whether that's a bug in the works or whatever, but you've got to bear in mind that it is beta. And I must admit, I've been having a lot of fun with it. The way it interacts with a lot of other, you know, bits of software that you have on your phone and in your computer and things like that is really quite encouraging. It's easy.
20 million, did you say?
20 million,
How many Australians are there? 22 million, something like that?
Yeah, thereabouts.
That's not bad.
22, 23 probably by now. Yeah.
It's making quite a dent.
Now, just bring me up to speed with this. With these circle of friends, I can send a post to just one circle, can't
yes,
I?
And
that
you can.
One circle could have people from other circles in it, but that means if I send it to Tech Talk Radio group or something, if I created a group like that, they could also be friends, but I could send it just to the Tech Talk Radio people.
Yes,
correct.
Separate. Yeah, I like that idea.
And you can send it to... It's like Facebook walls with a few extra walls.
Okay. Well, I haven't got into Facebook walls, but sometimes I don't post because, you know, it goes to so many people. It's not just family, and then it's like...
Now,
yeah, I like that idea.
Now, there was an event in relation to Google Plus of biblical proportions during the course of the week.
Yes, and there
that,
was.
That was our US correspondent, Lydia Davis, who has been a staunch anti-Facebooker. She's never managed to find her way to that social network. Did actually appear in my circle of friends, I think in yours too, didn't
she
you,
did,
Dr. Ron?
She did.
And mine.
So, oh, there you go. So she's made her presence being felt. So she's finally migrated into a social networking skill. So welcome, Lydia. I'm sure you're listening to the show. So you can all go and befriend her and
hang out.
Get into one of us. Yeah, hang out.
Hang get a
out.
Room.
Hunged out.
It's a great term.
It is, isn't it?
Is that room. What it's called? Get a room.
No,
you click
no.
on get a room.
No, market.
Mark's work circles.
When,
where were you?
When they have to book a conference room.
Right, yeah, let's get
so
a room.
When it's
not
have
even
a meeting.
When we have to book it, if I just want to say something private, you know, with another person about something that's related to work and you can't let the whole office hear about it, it's a bit privileged. So let's get a room. You
this,
know?
Is, this is your work's equivalent of the cone of silence.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, because there's a whole lot of these little meeting rooms just for this sort of purpose.
Very good. Okay. Now, in other news this week, which I thought was quite interesting, just because we're talking about space and communications and deep, all that sort of stuff. Did you know that in Western Australia, there's a radio quiet zone?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good. There's this new telescopy thing.
You don't look impressed.
No, it's caused not caused me grief recently, but I've had to deal with it with work, let's just say.
All right. Well, let's just say there's this satellite array over there called the Square Kilometre Array. It's a big telescope project, which, because Australia is so well placed to see into the universe with little interference, the regulatory body has a radio quiet zone or radio free zone, which means that you can't have radio transmitters or anything that makes noises in the radio spectrum in that particular vicinity, because there's a boffin in a little coat sitting in a room somewhere with headphones on. And as soon as your CB radio chirps, like, oh, he takes his headphones off and slams on. Who was that?
Yeah, they give you a geographic centre, a lat long, a latitude and longitude. And then from there, they say, don't transmit anywhere within 200 kilometres of this. And if you're outside it and near the edge, you must transmit at this rate that, you know, drops off, or as you get further away, you can increase your power. So, you know, yeah.
Well, the zone was first established in 2005, and it governs a 150-kilometre radius surrounding the Murchison Radio Astronomy Observatory, which is in Western Australia, obviously. Now, the revised provisions, formerly of Friday, expanded the frequency range from an initial bottom end of 100 megahertz. So you used to be able to have broadcast radio. You could have up to, you couldn't have anything above 100, obviously, but you could have AM radio and below, I guess.
So you're going to have half the FM band.
Half the FM band, correct. And traditionally, the community broadcasters are in the lower half, so they get through. It's a commercial one, so they're probably doing us all a favour. But anyway, the bottom end of 100 meg to 70 meg and a height of 25.25 gigahertz, which rules out microwave ovens.
Yeah, Wi-Fi.
Door openers. What other else? There's lots of transmitting things in those very, very high frequencies.
Yeah, probably rules out Bluetooth.
It know? Does. It's all in that spectrum. Yeah. Wireless end routers and things like that. You can't have any hotspots. What about satellites? Because they all would have downlink frequencies in those particular...
That's therefore, that's why it's a quiet zone, so they can hear the satellites.
Oh, is that why? Yeah. So we could have better space communication back to Earth.
Yeah, some of that's part of the reason. Yeah. If it's the same area, I mean, if it's the square kilometre array, probably they're looking for other things. But one of the areas that's listening to satellites is a quiet zone as well out near Geraldton. Same reason.
Well, it is radio astronomy, and radio astronomy obviously listens in certain parts of radio spectrum. So hence the reason why they want things to be nice and quiet. So I thought that was quite interesting, really. And the Square Kilometre Array apparently is a very highly sought-after research facility from all scientific parts of the world.
So did we get the gig for that? I haven't kept up with it, but I knew that it was like...
Well, they're building it out there, so I'm assuming
so
that...
So we won, basically, over that or the other parts of the world.
Either that or we've rented some land and they're putting out this all these little... Because there's hundreds of these little small dishes over, I'm assuming, a 1 kilometre by 1 kilometre...
Gareth says WA is just about a technology-free zone.
That's a bit harsh, Gareth.
I thought that too.
Come on.
Might have the mining boom, but...
Yeah, but they drive those trucks. You know what I heard the other day? They're driving trucks by GPS. So from Perth, they drive those huge mining trucks.
Yep.
I think they've got an ad for it on the TV at the moment. From Perth, no driver, and they can drive it within a couple of centimetres, you know, accuracy, And because it's so accurate, it drives the same road every time. So it digs tracks and it digs
so that
holes in the tracks, you know, in the road.
So you get ruts. You fall into the ruts.
Because it's always in the same tracks because it's so accurate.
That's fantastic, isn't it? How far can they drive? How far do they drive them via remote control?
You know, the normal thing, go and pick up this and go and dump it over there. And pick this up and go and dump, you know, iron ore here, dump it over there.
So, that's amazing.
Mm, yeah, I thought it was pretty amazing.
I love smart technology. It's really good, isn't it? There's some great television around with good technology on it at the moment too. Richard Hammond, remember him from Top Gear?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, SBS running a program about engineering connections, which was on the other night. Absolutely stopped me dead in my tracks. Very worthwhile.
Is he the one who was in the pressure chamber last night, or I turned flick channels, some guy?
No, he wasn't in a pressure chamber. He was talking about the big...
He was going to go up in a U-2 spy plane to the edge of space?
Oh, look, he probably would if given half the chance. He nearly killed himself doing Top Gear or one of those things recently.
Might have been a different guy.
In a jet car.
Another Top Gear guy.
Yeah. Speaking of Top Gear, shall we talk briefly about the National Broadband Network? Because we talked about it in the news there, Dr. Ron, before.
Yeah, we did.
Internode have decided to be the first cab off the rank to release the pricing for accessing Australia's infamous...
Fledgling,
all those acronyms.
Getting off the ground still.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? But it's there, and apparently you'll be able to connect to it in some way or another shortly. But they've got different platforms which you can actually sign up to.
I thought the pricing wasn't too bad.
So you're going to get a bronze, silver, gold, or platinum access to the National Broadband Network.
That's it.
So obviously the bronze is, you know, that's the entry level.
Yes.
Right through to the platinum, which is first class up the pointy end of the aeroplane.
Yep.
On the National Broadband Network.
And we've got prices ranging from the bottom end from just under $60 a month through to the pointy end, as Andrew said, just shy of $190 a month. For $190 a month, you get 100 meg down, 40 meg up, and you get 1 terabyte of data.
But funnily enough, half of that, speed-wise, is not half of that price-wise.
No.
Did you notice? It's not proportional. And Simon Hackett, who is the boss over there at Internode, he was actually in the press during the course of the week, sort of talking about some of the issues that they've had in coming up with these prices. Because it's not as simple and as straightforward as it can sort of seems, but yet, after all, it's just bandwidth, so...
Well, yeah, Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has thrown a spanner in the works, according to Mr. Hackett. Mr. Hackett said that the ACCC now wants there to... they've significantly increased the number of interconnect points.
Yeah. Do you want to hear him?
Yeah, let's hear.
Here he is.
So it cost us many thousands of dollars a month for each of these connections just to plug in and be ready to connect customers. And it takes thousands of customers in each of those connections for those overhead costs to be kind of distributed amongst paying customers. That wasn't so bad when there were 7 capital city connections. Now there's 121. The network has got proportionally more expensive to connect to. The more people download, the more we have to pay NBN Co. Effectively, there's a download-related tax built into the network cost. So the more people download, the more expensive it is for us, and therefore the more we have to charge consumers. That cost is actually artificial. It doesn't cost the network any more to download more data.
Hmm. Maybe they should get a cap plan. Off the NBN.
Internode.
Do you reckon?
Internode should get a cap plan.
Well, it's good enough for us consumers. Why can't Internode get a cap plan off NBN?
Yeah. Well, I can see where he's coming from because previously they were going to be 7 interconnect points in the capital city.
Why have we got so many more internet? Like, I could understand 7 to 10 or to 20 maybe, but 120 odd.
Because the ACCC wants the NBN to be everywhere.
But isn't it everywhere?
No.
Do you have to run a cable from Bendigo to Melbourne or from Orange to Sydney or from...
Well, this is the thing. If there was
only... Cairns to Brisbane. Sorry, I'll stop that now.
If there was only an interconnect point in Melbourne, then country Victorian customers, the ISPs would have to run their own infrastructure between the customer and the interconnect point in Melbourne. So what the ACCC has said is to make the NBN much, 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 much more accessible to everybody, to smaller ISPs, and then their customers, we're going to have interconnect points all over Victoria, all over New South Wales, all over Western Australia.
But wouldn't most ISPs come back to a major centre to connect into the backbone anyway?
Well, the smaller ones wouldn't, no. Smaller ones might be regional. You might have a
Ballarat or a Bendigo.
Exactly, or even smaller, Mark. You might have an internet or an ISP cooperative type organisation, maybe in Warrnambool.
So they've decentralised the where you connect into the NBN from, from a provider's point of view.
This is what they've done. An internode saying, well, for us to be competitive now and to be able, like we had our infrastructure into Melbourne, we had infrastructure in Sydney, we had infrastructure in Brisbane, but for now for us to be competitive and to be able and to have to connect to all these interconnect points, we're going to have to put in a huge amount of new infrastructure.
Well, Stephen Conroy seems to be quite convinced that this will be a competitive thing, this NBN. Here's what he had to say.
The ACCC, the umpire in this case, made its decision. That's the decision the government has to live with, and that's the decision that's being implemented. It is fair to say Internode were disappointed by that, as were the government. There are many companies yet to put their pricing in, and we expect to see robust competition taking place, which will see consumers better off because of NBN as pricing becomes more and more competitive.
So will that in fact happen as the Telstras and the TPGs and the whoever else comes on board? If they're all going to compete, I guess there'll be slightly marginal differences in the pricing to access it, but we're not going to see massive differences, are we?
Probably not going to see massive differences, but Mr. Conroy said also that he was disappointed with the ACCC's decision, but that we had to live by it and they're an independent body. And as you said, the umpires made a decision,
yep.
But that ultimately competition will... You know, the customer will be the winner on the day because of competition.
So does that mean that the large players like the Telstras and the Optuses, if they get on board with the NBN, that they will have a lot of customers because they traditionally have a lot of customers?
Yep.
And if they migrate them all into the NBN from a smaller company which has maybe a 10% customer base compared to one of the big telcos, does that mean they can just gouge, cheapen it up and get more and more people to jump from small provider onto large provider because they're doing the discounts in bulk?
Well, I'd say the ACCC will be watching them very closely for anti-competitive behaviour.
There's a lot of questions.
We're still a long way from that happening, though.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you under the pump. I think putting it out there.
Yeah. I think we're still probably a long way from that, from being in that position where we have to worry about that. But ultimately, yeah, the ACCC will keep an eye on everybody very carefully.
So Internode have released their prices. I don't know when can you actually connect to it? Do you know? Did in the press release, was there any details that you actually saw, or can you do it now?
I'm trying to remember.
All right, while you have a quick look. The actual pricing is bronze, silver, and gold,
yep.
And platinum, as we mentioned. The slowest entry, which is 12 meg down, 1 meg up. Now, that's the guarantee that the government made to everybody. So straight off the shelf, the minimum entry level, according to Internode's prices, is, and I'm going to round up here, $60.
Yep.
Now, that gives you, it's 30 gig, really. Yep. I don't know whether it's metered up or metered down or both, but we'll try and work that out. Maybe some people in the chat might know yet. But anyway, that's the lowest, so it's going to cost you minimum $60, and the maximum price, which is the all singing, all dancing platinum one, as you said before, on $190 gives you a terabyte. And 100 meg down and 40 meg up. Now, 40 meg up, that's the biggest speed up, I guess, from a consumer's point of view, I think we've ever had in this country.
That's huge.
40 meg up. Not a lot of people get 40 meg down. Well, no one gets 40 meg down unless you're actually quite lucky and very close to an exchange and maybe cable or something. But I don't know any technology that give you 40 meg down at the moment at a consumer level.
For 10 meg down.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of people would.
So how does that 12/1 down, 1 up, at $59 for 30 gigabyte compared to what's in the market at the moment? Is that about right or is it slightly more expensive?
I think it's on par mm-hmm. with what the guys are offering at the moment. Very similar. Like I know I have at work, I have, I think it's 400 gig down in peak and 400 gig down in off peak. And that's at ADSL2 standards. And that costs me around about $100 a month.
Okay.
For those type of speeds.
400 gig.
For 400, 200.
That's huge.
I think it's 400 down, 400 up. Yeah, it's just shy of a terabyte.
Wow.
Of data, I think it is. Anyway, but yeah, it's not bad. But I guess as more and more people roll out prices on the NBN, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And are they going to bundle stuff? You know, like how all the true value of things is eroded in cap plans, and if you get this and that and the other thing, everything gets a 10% discount and, oh.
Yeah, these internode prices were including telephone services as well. So,
like, and they get their node voice thing in there. All NBN plans. There you go.
So it does include a voice over IP service.
It does, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's very close then.
You can go naked fiber.
It won't be naked DSL, it'll be naked fiber. Yeah, naked NBN.
Just shut the curtains over the window, it'll be high res, high def.
Certainly will be. There's other ISPs that have released pricing as well. So,
oh, is there?
Yeah, it's Exitel.
How did they compete?
Is another one.
How do
they
compare,
they're cheaper.
Say.
Cheaper.
And they're a smaller company, aren't they?
Small company, yeah. They've said the high end will be like 100 megabits per second, 200 gigabyte plan, $100 per month, which is about $20 cheaper than Internode. Gizmodo, we've got a couple of good reviews there today on some different pricing plans. So, look, these are all very much proposed. That's something that we shouldn't lose track of at the moment. These are subject to change. Exitel are putting them out there. Internode's putting them out there. They're trying to generate some discussion and some interest in the market. They're certainly not set in stone. So we might see the data rates go up. We might see the data allowances go up. The prices might go up. Prices might go down. But it's a ballpark. It's what they expect it's going to cost people at this point.
All right. Well, obviously, it's going to be an interesting marketplace in the next little bit with telco providers bringing out their offerings, big and small. So unless you're in one of those areas, like a, what they call a greenfields estate, where it's they're not allowed to put copper in, they can only run fibre, you might be restricted to applying for a NBN access for all your lock, stock,
and barrel
stuff.
Well, you'll have to get NBN. You'll have to pay for it.
Copper anymore.
That's it.
So, yes.
Graham in our chat room says, I think those internet prices sound pretty good for the speeds, and I'm sure they'll come down over time.
I'm sure they will. That's what Conroy's banking on, politically speaking.
I think they do sound good too, Graham. I think they're in the right ballpark as they are at the moment. And look, if you build a new house in a greenfields estate, like Andrew's saying, if you don't want to pay the money to connect to the NBN, then just don't pay it. Don't connect. Use your mobile phone.
That's a thought, isn't it?
You've got other options. There are other things you can do if you don't want to fork out the cash.
I must admit, Telstra's doing some pretty amazing things with mobile technology at the moment. I think the speeds that I achieve on my mobile broadband is comparable to that of ADSL on a bad day.
Which is a sad indictment on the state of ADSL in this country.
It sort of is, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
Mark's laughing.
Your home broadband should be 10 times or 100 times faster than what you can get on your mobile network. With no disrespect to the high-quality mobile networks, Mark, competent engineers work on in this country.
No, Telstra's got a good network, and they've dropped their prices, and everyone's jumping on board. And there's been some problems with some of the other ones, and, they're really getting heavily used now. So we'll keep an eye on how they handle that.
I must admit, since I've moved back to Telstra, I've been there for over 6 months now, there have been a few call drops, which traditionally there weren't.
Okay.
But, yeah, I guess that's just a sign of the time with a lot of the market moving around and signing up with other telcos. And, of course, the other great thing that they're doing these days is they're slowly starting to move away from locking you in with handset contracts. So, as a result, you see a 12-month contract where you can just buy the service from them. You get a SIM, whack it in a phone, and off you go. You use the call rates that are applicable, I guess, for that particular contract. And, of course, there's some doozies and plans out there. If you're big on texting, which a lot of people are, especially the younger folk, then, there's no skin off anyone's nose type sort of thing. You just go for free. It's all built into the plan. Here's something interesting too. I think last time you were on the show, Mark, you spoke of femtocells.
Yeah, that would be right, yes.
Yeah. There's a thing that's come out in ZDNet during the course of the week, written by a journo who was saying that Telstra are alleging that femtocells are causing coverage holes.
Well, it is possible.
Yeah.
You know, so it can cause, if you like, a black spot. So if that signal gets out and you're not able to get onto it because it's not your femtocell, then you actually cause blocking to other people and who can...
So it's jamming.
It's
sort
almost
of, to a degree.
Jamming, and that's the problem with them. They're so hard to regulate. You know, it's not like some engineers going in saying, we'll do this and this and control the coverage. You're giving it to someone who's going to put it in their window and it's going to then get outside, person going past.
There's no regulation on where and how you can put it. Telstra's Chief Technology Officer, Dr. Hugh Bradlow, said that femtocells designed to boost indoor 3G network coverage could actually create these black spots. Femtocells are devices deployed into homes and buildings where coverage is a little average, acting as like a little mini cell.
These are these consumer-owned, do-it-yourself mobile phone cells.
Mm. Yeah, so it is possible that
Would you pay three, not once, not twice, but three times to actually...
Didn't we discuss that the other day? Yeah, it's like...
Look, it's not going to happen that often, so let's not blow it out of proportion, but it is possible. So I think he's just highlighting it. Maybe he's using it to his advantage, but it's certainly possible. It's not going to be a lot of the time. Most people would have it, you know, in the worst spot in their house, which is probably around the middle, you know, and therefore it won't probably get out to the street level where other people could be affected by it that much.
The interesting thing about all this femtocell stuff, and this is what Telstra came out and said, that they're reluctant to join the competitors in putting in these or offering these femtocells, because in effect you're actually getting the subscriber to build your network for you or fix a hole in your network.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Telstra has a really well and truly entrenched signal out there.
Yep.
And of course Optus are selling them and Vodafone are selling these femtocells, but Telstra aren't going to do it just yet, or they're reluctant to. And so theoretically it could be degrading those competitors' networks because of for the reasons you've just said.
Yeah. Now, I saw them being trialed by Telstra. Not trialed. That's not the right word. Tested in a lab back in about 2005, 2000. Probably about 2005, 2006 area. So they have actually tested them and know what they're capable of doing and have chosen, you know, not to go with it for whichever reasons, I'm not sure. But maybe there's some of the ones that they're highlighting now that, you know, that their competitors are using them for.
And which was the network that was using them recently? Was it Vodafone?
Just, I think it was Optus.
Oh, Optus, was it? They came out recently and said they were going to be offering them.
Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it was Optus.
Mm. So they're femtocells creating more trouble than they're worth in the land of mobile communications.
Look, they're becoming popular in the US because people have poor AT&T coverage and they're the ones who are putting them out there, so
and people with AT&T because they're locked into that network because I own an iPhone.
Yeah, they were well, not anymore. You
I
can
didn't.
Go
I thought they
now.
Could. Yeah, I thought you could go.
Can you?
You could walk the walk.
You can get out of AT&T. Can you? If you're an Apple owner.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go to the Verizon network, you need a CDMA iPhone now. You see, so they're not the same iPhone. They're still an iPhone, but the background data is, you know, AT&T uses 3G HSPA and Verizon uses a CDMA technology.
So the phones won't actually swap networks. You have to buy a new handset.
Yep, that's correct.
Well, most Apple people would have moved on from the 3GSs up to the 4s. And
Apple people will say, oh, I've got to buy another iPhone. Ace.
Correct. That's one way of looking at it, Dr. Ron. Absolutely.
So I had a...
How many phones have you been through in the last 12 months?
I knew that'd fire up.
I've had one.
One?
Mm-hmm.
Just the one?
Well, two. I upgraded from a 3G to a 4.
Which one did you break? I mean, which one accidentally snapped all
it
by itself?
It spontaneously went ping. That was the 4.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
So you've had two 4s. You're on the second 4.
Yes, I'm on my second 4.
Oh.
So you've had 3.
No. It's the same phone. It's just a different phone.
So how many Androids have you had? How many Androids have you had, Dr. Ron?
Two.
Yep. And one just was old and ran out
one
after 2 years.
Yeah, and the rest.
I had a Google Nexus One, which I had on the T-Mobile network over there.
Yep.
And it doesn't do Next G frequencies here, so I would have had to have bought the AT&T version, which came out later. And I almost swapped it with someone before I came back, but I got cold feet at the last moment, not knowing how it worked, and they couldn't demonstrate it to me working well. So I pulled out, and now I wish I had, because then I'd be using it on Next G now.
Well, I must admit, when I had my 3G, I took the 3GS Apple iPhone. I took that to the United States when you were over there back in April last year, and it roamed beautifully. In fact, the coverage was better in the US on a Telstra SIM than it was on an AT&T or a T-Mobile SIM or whatever it was like that. It just because it roamed between all the providers.
Yep, that's right.
Whereas see, those guys, those three amigos, they just built a better network for themselves overseas. They've probably got their Telstra SIM and that's it.
They've got a mess over there with all their different frequencies. It's a lot worse than here. You can hear everyone's used to roaming between the carriers because they had similar frequencies. Over there, it's just a mess. You know, different, completely different technologies that aren't compatible in the same phone.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to go and have a glass of water. And
we're going to have iPhones and Androids at 30 paces.
We will. Yep. We will be back, hopefully all of us. After our short little break, and we're going to have the view from the couch this week.
Hammock?
No, he's out of the hammock now.
It's pouring with rain outside in Melbourne. He can't possibly be in a hammock in this weather.
I don't know. Well, not unless he's got a hammock up north somewhere that he's not owning up about.
Maybe.
He could have.
He might have migrated for the winter.
Yeah.
Maybe it's an indoor hammock.
Could be. Now, there's a thought, isn't it? In front of the heater.
Home theatre system, hammock.
How would you hang it?
With hooks.
With hooks, sky hooks.
Yeah. Silly question, Dr.
My mind boggles. And we've got some computer game news too.
Woohoo!
Yes, the worm has turned apparently, but you'll have to hang in there.
Good news or bad news?
Good news.
Good news.
Yeah, wait for it. We'll have a line after the break too, probably. Anyway, back in a minute.
An estimated 89% of all emails were spam in 2010.
Details are still a bit sketchy on this. I'm not sure exactly how it's panning out.
Don't
That'll be really
good.
I'm not. So what is the answer?
Couldn't stop.
What does Harvey Norman have to do with technology?
iPad 2 is here.
Now, the fifth type of headphones I was talking about.
Entertaining.
Is an audio snob, ladies and gentlemen.
Informative.
Spin, 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 because an additional 1 million.
Independent.
If I could have mini XLRs on the sides of my head, I would.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You know, not everything goes according to plan when you fly in aeroplanes, as we were sort of alluding to at the beginning of the show.
Don't say that.
No, it does. The Prince William and his wife Catherine were amongst first-class passengers compensated by British Airways after an in-flight entertainment system failure. How about that? Sorry, there's no movies to watch. You're on a long-haul flight. There's going to be a revolution. Oh, well, I'll give you $300 if you sit down and be quiet. Okay.
Do they not have a cupboard full of books or something?
I don't know.
Those sorts of scenarios? They
could have had magazines or something. It could have, must
iPads
have been.
iPads or something.
Well, yeah, you can plug them in these aircrafts and play those sort of things. But, yeah, you had to bring your own movies on this particular flight. So, and that was as the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge returned to London from their recent tour of Canada and California. 10-hour trip. They had to amuse themselves. What do you reckon they did? They could have done a cameo. They would have been up the pointy end of the plane.
I know where you're going. Mix don't and mingle. Go there, okay?
Okay, I won't.
They could have got a room and hung
they
out.
They are honeymooners.
Actually, would you... No, they wouldn't have bought the whole front of the plane. I was just thinking of Inception. You know how the longest flight in the world's Los Angeles to Melbourne?
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that.
Didn't
is
you?
It?
No.
It is.
Oh.
It is.
And longest that's non-stop.
Longest non-stop flight. Yeah. Is that. And, yeah, that's why Inception was done in the front of the aircraft there
by
because they needed it.
Or time?
Time. Time. So, cool. But anyway, just as well it wasn't that flight.
Yeah.
Could have been very interesting.
They must book at the whole front of the plane. What about all their minders and...
Well, that's what I would have thought. You know, hardly if they travel incognito sort of or anything like that, is it? Mm. You know, it's sort of the way it is.
They're fairly modern and low-key, though. I think they'd probably shun a lot of that stuff. They'd probably only have a very small amount of people travelling with them, wouldn't they?
I don't know. I've never travelled with them. Maybe someone knew. The paparazzi probably
the Royal Mile High Club, Graham said.
Okay. Adam Turner has a view from the couch. He does it every week on this radio station.
We're up to that part of the program.
We are. And it's only, we've got 50 minutes to go. So, yes, this week, Mac Mini. You going to get one, Lena? You're a Mac girl. Do you like...
I used to have a Mini.
Yeah?
They make good servers.
Do they? Why?
They're stackable and they're little and they're good.
Have you got Lion yet?
No, I've been too busy. I haven't put it on yet.
Really?
I'm looking forward to it. Apparently the new mail client's really good.
There's been a few things I've been reading on Google Plus. Certain Mac users have been frustrated. They had to put it on a couple of times. It didn't go on smoothly. I don't know too much about it yet.
Yeah,
but
my
there's
husband
a few grumblings out there.
Tried to update his work computer and
yeah.
He got a few kernel panics when he was installed.
Why? What did it do? Did it give him the pink screen of death or something? Or the
no,
white
the
screen
little,
of
the
death?
Little
or?
Kernel panic. Just a little like, ugh.
Oh.
It just sort of freezes up and...
Does it?
Yeah.
It's like the Mac version
the
or... Mac version of a blue screen or a Linux-based system version of a blue screen.
You had to go via 10.6 point something to get to 10.7. So you had to upgrade to that first and then move across.
Mm.
So, be interesting to see what... I'm sure the chat will come to life in a minute about people. Is Warlock on there tonight? He'd know all about it. I'm sure he's been running it for some time up there. In one of our Sydney listeners. He's very much an Apple guru. But anyway, Adam Turner, our regular, who writes for The Age and all those newspapers and stuff like that. Not News of the World anymore. No, he never wrote for them. We could start rumours. A techo? Phones? No? Okay.
Let's not go there.
This week's View from the Couch, all to do with the new Mac Mini and the future of the optical disc.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
It's interesting to see that Apple's new Mac Mini abandons the DVD drive, but I'm wondering if anybody cares. Faster, cheaper, and more powerful. The new Mac Mini has a lot to offer. Every time a new Mac Mini hits the Apple Store, I start to fantasize about building the dream Media Center PC. Even though I'm convinced that a handful of dedicated devices are more practical for most lounge rooms, it's just that the Mac Mini is so small and sleek and sexy. Plus, every new model seems to be cheaper yet more powerful than the last. Regular listeners will have heard my rants about Mac OS's lack of support for third-party MPEG-2 hardware decoding. To be completely honest, if you're looking at the Mac Mini for the lounge room, I'd seriously consider installing Windows 7. Yes, I know, I await your angry letters. OS aside, last week's new Mac Mini starts at $699 and looks better than ever, although we're still getting shafted on the price considering it's $599 in the US. This latest Mac Mini features a dual-core Intel Core i5 or Core i7 processor and an AMD Radeon HD 6630M discrete graphics card, or else a quad-core i7 in the server configuration. On the back, you'll find HDMI and the new Thunderbolt. Very nice. It's not until you study the spec sheet that you realize the optical drive is now missing from both the desktop and server models. So is it time for a riot? I don't think so. Apple tends to lead the way when it comes to ditching legacy features. It generally cops a lot of flack, but in hindsight, people tend to agree that it was the right move. Eliminating the DVD drive from the Mac Mini is a major milestone, probably more significant than ditching the optical drive in the MacBook Air. It's also perhaps the final nail in the coffin of any hopes of seeing Macs ship with Blu-ray drives, which I know will frustrate some people. If Apple could, I think it would be happy to scrap the DVD drive from every Mac today. It's a business decision. These days, the primary purpose of every Apple product is to drive us to Apple's online store, purchasing our entertainment from the iTunes store and now purchasing our software from the Mac App Store. There's no space for optical discs in Apple's plans for world domination, but if Cupertino moves too fast, it will scare people away. If optical drives are phased out slowly enough, Apple is hoping that no one will care. I'd say the time is about right for Apple to make this next move. A year or two ago even, people would have made a big deal about scrapping the DVD drive in the Mac Mini, especially as many of us envision it as a media center computer. But these days, anyone who wants a lounge room PC has probably already ripped their disk collection to their computer or network drive anyway. Their lounge room media player is little more than a streaming box, pulling content from their network and the internet. If you do have a disc collection, it doesn't cost much to drop in a Blu-ray player alongside your media player, but you'll find yourself using the optical drive less and less over time. Optical discs are far from dead. Like I said recently, just because early adopters have embraced something new doesn't mean the mainstream is ready to change. There's a lot of life left in the DVD format, but not for those of us who fancy a lounge room computer. This isn't the end of DVDs. But this new Mac Mini without an optical drive will be certainly mentioned in the obituary when physical media eventually bites the dust.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there you have it. If you're looking for something for the lounge room, the Mac Mini, maybe Windows 7, as please address all correspondence to Adam. You know where he is.
Yes.
123 Fake Street is his address.
That'll find him.
That'll find him. Yeah. Yeah, the postman delivers there. It's a bit like sending a mail to Santa at the North Pole. They know where to deliver it.
Adam Turner, Tech Talk Radio, 123 Fake Street. It'll find him.
That's right.
So they dispensed with the optical drive.
They have.
So they're pushing everyone into the cloud, aren't they?
No. They're not. Pushing everyone to the App Store.
Yes, that's right. The App Store in the cloud.
Well, I guess so.
Apple Cloud, the iCloud.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Is that right?
So, and as before, we heard Adam, and if you like listening to Adam, he's going to be on earlier in next few shows.
Is he
used to our format?
Are we going to rejig some things?
Yeah, there's a few rejigs to be jigged between now and the next show, so.
Is it going to hurt?
I don't know. We'll see.
Now, Dr. Ron, you've got an EE PC.
I do.
It doesn't have an optical drive, does it?
It does not. No, you're right. No,
and how have you been getting on the last 2 years without it?
Well, that's an excellent point, Mark. I'll be getting on just fine.
And have you got an external one that you plug in when you need to?
Absolutely not.
So, not a problem, really.
I have.
For 2 years.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Wi-Fi. That's or there's a wired network port as well. It's how I get stuff in and out of the machine.
You don't watch movies on it, do you?
I don't watch movies, no.
And that's traditionally where you would probably need.
And it's a portable computer. It's not a Mac Mini.
Yeah. Hmm. And you could compare that to the Air. Yep. No drives or anything like that. True. Lightweight, powerful, and all that sort of stuff.
Just trying to make the point that you can survive without one. If you need a Blu-ray player or something to play Blu-ray movies, you need an optical drive. But yeah, can get away.
Apple and Blu-ray are like oil and water. The two don't mix. So
really,
truly,
they've
always pushed Blu-ray away and said, "Come to our app store and download our movies."
Download
and
stuff.
Like
Yep.
If you've got a big enough internet plan to handle a Blu-ray movie, right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. But it's not so much a Blu-ray movie. It's a high-def movie, which will be crunched using the H.264 codec and delivered to you on your favorite.
Nerd alert.
Yeah. did you know that Apple Lion, bought from the Mac store, has now sold over 1 million copies? And we were just chatting before you had...
It was over 1 million copies on its first day of availability.
Yeah.
It's probably triple that now or more.
It could well be. That's not a bad uptake.
It's pretty good. The other thing to note as well about me saying that they're pushing people into the cloud is this is the... the Apple's... the new version of Lion. This is the first operating system that they're offering as a digital download.
Yep.
Is that correct? Am I right in saying
that? Yes.
And if you want to buy it on a USB stick or some other...
Can you? I didn't think you could. I think you'd only get it through the App Store.
Not yet. You'll be able to buy it physically, but they're going to charge you more.
As you do.
A lot more.
They're training you.
Yeah, they want you downloading
Apple
stuff.
Way.
Now, what are you using tonight, Mark, to connect to the internets?
Samsung Galaxy Tab.
Samsung Galaxy Tab. That's a nice little unit.
It is a nice unit.
I haven't seen one in the flesh before.
They were on sale with Telstra just before Easter. And I got it on that day. They were selling like hotcakes because they were normally about 700 when they came out, and they were being sold for less than half price.
Yep.
So that's why I got one. I couldn't have justified the 500 or 550 that they'd sort of come down to before that.
Yep.
But I was happy to pay that sort of money for it. And then I just got a little case which has got a Bluetooth keyboard in with it and makes a nice little package to carry on the train. And
now, can I take a photo of that on the condition that I blur out something?
Yes, you can.
Okay, good.
Because we know what happened last time.
Information there that not for public release.
Our listeners are very... They scrutinise things. So we're having to blur things out because you're all very astute listeners.
You're a little bit too switched on for us. Lena's got an iPad, and that obviously has no floptical drive or anything else.
Does not.
So how does that connect to the outside world? Wi-Fi?
Wi-Fi.
And you can dock it?
Yes. I can do Bluetooth, I think, as well.
What do you dock it into? Another Apple machine or your PC?
I normally do, well...
Because you can have iTunes MacBook. On a PC, can't you? And you can dock it that way?
Yes, yeah.
We do.
I tether it to my MacBook.
Your MacBook, all right. And Andrew's got a little netbook in here.
Mm. I do.
And that hasn't got an optical drive.
No, not connected to it.
There are no optical drives in this radio studio.
Sort of, there are. There's three or four sitting over here.
Old-fashioned audio, CD audio players. That, yes, Andrew's resting his right arm on. But
anyway, some other interesting news before we do digress too far away from the Apple juggernaut.
I'll take a photo.
Apple is axing the white MacBook, and it's updating, obviously, the MacBook Air.
What colour is the MacBook Air going to be?
Oh, no, silver, die-cast.
MacBook Airs are all silver.
Yeah, well, there you go. So there's no... Yeah. Anyway, Apple has updated its thin and light MacBook Air laptops alongside the much-anticipated release of the OS X Lion, whilst also unceremoniously discontinuing its entry-level MacBook line. Now, there are a lot of those out there in the real world, isn't there?
Mm.
Have you ever had or owned one of those? Because I think JD who
used... A white
used,
one?
Yeah.
No, I don't like them.
Oh, really?
No, I really don't.
Well, what's
like
wrong
them.
With them? What's wrong with them. What don't you like about them?
They go all brown and gross.
Oh, they get heated up and they go...
No, not
hot
from the
brown.
Heat, more just for your hands.
Like brown
your
and
palms.
Gross.
Yeah.
Hot and sweaty palms them go brown.
Yeah, when your palms just keep touching, you know, near the space bar and everything, it all where your hands rest when you're naturally touching the keyboard, there's a bit of discoloration eventually. But having said that, my old PowerBook was one of the silver ones, and the silver paint stuff started coming off eventually. So it's probably a problem on most computers.
You're going to get one of these new Airs. They look really nice.
No, I don't.
Very grunty. 1.8 core i7, i5, i7 processors. No?
I have no use for one.
Really?
Nope.
So the iPad is doing just what you want it to do.
For what I want the iPad to do, yeah. It's either the MacBook Pro or the iPad. I don't really need anything in between.
I saw a really great app for of iPad or an iGadget the other day.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at SMPTE, which is the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers convention, there's some great little apps and gadgets out there now which actually let iPad viewers see what a camera is seeing. So, for example, you could have anything from a state-of-the-art Panavision camera through to a digital SLR like one of the Canon 5Ds, And even if you've got a camera which is in a very small, confined space, which is what you do when you make television or motion pictures, sometimes you've got to stick them in really small places to get the shot you want. You can plug these little like card application devices in, little video capture devices, which you can either take in as a digital feed like HDMI, like you would normally plug into your television set, and it transmits it through wireless Wi-Fi through to a gadget, whether it be an iGadget or whether it be an Android gadget or any gadget that can basically receive Wi-Fi. You download the appropriate app off the appropriate app store, and voila, you have a viewfinder which is looking at really good, high-quality video.
Yeah, but how does it look?
It looks stunning.
Really?
And it's four frames delayed.
Okay. It's not too far behind, is it?
No, it's not. But at the end of the day, you've got a really good portal into seeing what the camera is seeing. And on an iPad, as Lena would testify, that would be pretty good. It'd be like watching a movie in wireless. And it means from a director's point of view, you could be over the other side setting up a shot, talking to talent while the crew's setting up, and they can just glance down and have a look on their iPad or their gadget.
And you can see what the cameraman's seeing.
And you can see exactly what the cameraman's seeing. Just a slightly delayed four frames, which is 4/25ths of a second. Not too bad. So, and the other great thing about these things, they retail, I think, for sub $2,000, which is, from a video point of view, it's not bad.
So you need a spare HDMI output on the camera.
Yep.
And the device plugs in.
Yep.
And then the application, like for the iPad, is it free or?
Yeah, it is free.
Yep.
The one that I've got loaded on the HTC, I'll
Did
tell you
load it up?
Absolutely.
You're super nerd.
When you're sitting there, that's what
super
you got.
Super nerd.
You got to do these things.
Okay, so you, at Cynthia at the conference, you were able to connect in with your HTC and look?
Yeah, the guy on the stand, g'day Dan.
Hi Dan.
So give me your phone and I'll show you. And he went to connect in. And you can either use a wireless access point, or you can the actual device, the video transmitter, will be its own wireless device.
Okay.
So everyone can connect into it.
That's pretty cool.
Out in the thing. And I can't quite find it because I've got so many apps on this phone. Just talk amongst yourselves for a sec while I'm just scrolling. No, I can't quite see it there. But I'll find it down the track. But yeah, it's just one of those apps that you can download. They were demonstrating it on an iPad, one of the nice iPad 2s. And the pictures are great. You could wander around with your iPad, watching this video stream direct to your thing, full screen.
There's
full
great
res.
Media assets out there for iOS devices.
All devices.
Yeah, well, all devices now, yeah. But Elroy just mentioned in the chat, there was one, Nikon have an app where you can connect to an iOS device and use it as a remote for your camera. So when to take the photo or when to do all that. And we used an app as a clapper on the weekend where we were taking some footage to sync the audio and the video together when we started filming.
We use a real clapper.
Yeah, that's because you're like proper professional and stuff, and I'm not at all.
And stuff.
And stuff.
Yeah, no, I did the job. It worked well.
I'm sure. But yeah, there's a lot of good gadgets coming out. So we're starting to see all these things, tablets, iPhones, regular phones, smartphones, all mixing in and becoming quite a unique combination in all forms of production and stuff like that. Anyway, you went away, Lena. We've got to find out all about it.
Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
And before we start off, we've got to talk about the shelving that got unshelved.
Well, I said there may be a complication.
I know.
It might be not happening.
And rightly so, because it's only taken 20 years to get to this stage with this complicated issue. Yes. What happened? Do tell.
We are going to have an R18 rating for video games.
Oh, hooray.
Yay.
Yeah.
Finally.
And who's to thank for this? You?
Brendan O'Connor, Home Affairs Minister.
Really?
Pretty much. He's the one who's been standing up saying, guys, make it happen. Make it happen, make it happen, make it happen.
Yeah.
And putting the pressure on the Attorneys General to pull their finger out and hurry up and vote.
So is this nationally or a state level?
This is at a state level.
For which states?
Well, it gets a bit complicated.
Why can't it be easy?
There's government involved here. Make it easy, they'll be out of a job.
The press release at the end of the meeting, the SCAG meeting, the Standing Committee of Attorneys General.
Did they have a room?
They all went into a room
they having
in
a
Adelaide.
Huddle?
Oh, they were in Adelaide as well.
Hanging out, were
hanging
they?
Out.
Hanging out.
Well, you could. There wouldn't be that many SCAGs. You could all hang out together in the room.
SCAG room.
Shush. Sorry. They said the next step in the process is for all jurisdictions to seek approval for the new R18 guidelines in their respective cabinets. So we're not 100% locked in yet. Draft guidelines presented at the last meeting have since been amended.
And this requires some jurisdictions to seek approval from their respective cabinets. Once that is achieved, the Commonwealth will begin drafting legislation necessary to introduce the new R18 classification.
Good, good.
So the ball is rolling. It is moving.
But good. Is it going to gather no moss?
Well, the
or
New South Wales...
It's going to be like a pinball and go bounce, bounce, bounce and flip around for a while and, you know, it's just going to get lost.
And then go down the drain.
That's the one. Yeah, oh, damn, down the flipper.
The disappointment for me was the New South Wales Attorney General, Greg Smith.
But he's always been the problem child, hasn't he?
No, there's been a few different ones. There
oh,
was
really?
The South Australian one.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all recalcitrants, aren't they?
South Australian, that's right.
The reason I take umbrage with his viewpoint is that he's basically pleaded ignorance. As
what?
His reason.
He must have children.
He's announced that his intention to take the R18 rating issue back to his cabinet and come up with a position soon is mainly based that his reasons for abstaining from the vote stem from a lack of knowledge on the topic.
Oh.
But isn't he a skag? Part of skag?
He is. He is.
So shouldn't he be aware? That's
he
what
should
what
be
there
doing
for?
His
politicians
job.
Politicians can't
and
plead
learning.
Ignorance.
Yeah. Well, apparently they can. He highlights his certainty that New South Wales will not go against the other jurisdictions and will eventually support R18 plus for games, which is good. But stop messing around. Let's get this done already.
Just do it.
And South Australia look like they want to be doing something a bit different. They want to abolish the MA 15 plus and replace it with R18, which would be
how does
its
that
own
work in the cinemas then? Yeah.
No, this is it's just games.
Just games.
Just games.
Oh, okay.
Why can't be a classification that goes across all types.
Yeah, we need parity across all media. Yeah,
it's like having maximum speed limits varying in different states and different phone companies not talking to other phone companies. It's just going to be chaos.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, if you're driving a Toyota, you can do 110, but
dogs
yeah, if you're
and
in a Falcon,
together.
You can do 120 or something. It's bizarre.
That's very silly.
Correct.
But at least there's light at the end of this tunnel, finally. But not locked in just 100% just yet. But yeah, it's very exciting. But the South Australian abolishment of the MA 15 plus would be very annoying. It would mean that kids in South Australia might not be able to play games they've been playing for years.
Mm.
You know, the sequels and whatnot.
So there'd be nothing between like PG and R18 plus.
I think they just want G, PG, M, and R.
Mm.
So no MA 15 plus.
Makes sense. But as long as it's uniform across all the states and territories, that's got to be good.
Yeah.
Canberra will probably be different.
Probably.
Because they have fireworks.
And other things.
They got fireworks.
They're a rebellious territory. Wow, what other things have they got? They've got Floriade.
They've got other things.
Have they?
They've got, they have other classifications
they
beyond
other
R18 classification. Plus.
Yes, they do.
I should get out more.
You need to stay in more.
Evidently so. And I also went to Avcon.
Avcon?
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, the audiovisual convention.
No,
oh,
anime
sorry.
Video games. They get very angry.
They do.
Don't
what happened?
You won't like them when they're angry.
No. What happened? What did you see? Who did you talk to?
I talked to lots of people. I talked to a lot of game developers. They also had, the main convention in the convention center, and next to that in they had panels that you could go to and listen to. They also had the indie games room, and you know I've got a bit of a soft spot for indie games, so I was very excited to get in there and talk to all the developers. And they had a big circular room with a whole bunch of indies set up with their computers that they could show off their games, and you could sit and talk with them and have them talk you through it. And yeah.
Is it a vibrant environment,
very,
the indie
very,
game environment?
Very.
Do the indie developers get much of a go in the mainstream, or do you have to go and look for them in niche environments?
You
like
do
through different...
sometimes have to look for them.
Yeah.
They don't have the marketing budgets to make you
know
about them.
They're not an EB Games or an EA Games
no,
or a Sony or anything like that.
Not.
So
definitely
how
not.
Do they get their wares out there? Through websites? Do they try and get them distributed through like
yep.
Steam and
Steam,
things like that?
Yep.
Yeah,
Steam take up a lot of indie games. The iOS have a is re-
so
very,
the
very
big. So store is a big
the App
source?
Store's huge for yeah. indies. Basically, they have to work really hard at getting the name of their game out. So it's something I like covering when I'm working. I like covering indie games as much as I can to help them out and try and show some light on the good ones, because there is a lot of junk out there in all that stuff, as you get with lots of people doing it as a hobby and not as a full-time job.
Buddy, there's a reason why you're independent.
Yeah. There's a reason why no one will work with you. yeah, so that part of it, happening alongside Avcon, was really great, and I think it helped everyone get to just walk through and I think Ben Kilsby, who is organising it, I think he was telling me that they reckon about 75% of people who went to the convention had a look through the Indie Games Room while they were there. Right. So that's really good.
So, where was, I know it was in Adelaide, but where was it?
One the Adelaide Convention Centre.
Okay, and how many people do you reckon went through the doors there?
Apparently, what was it, 14,000? Something ridiculous like that, like a huge amount of people.
For Adelaide, I would have thought that'd be a good turnout for a game type sort of convention. Did they come from far and wide, or was
it
predominantly?
I came from Melbourne. There was a few different accents running around.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you all dress up like you did in the previous ones? Like, was Catwoman there? And
there was lots of cosplayers.
Oh, really?
There was a cosplay competition, so people came from everywhere to go and dress up as their favorite
cosplay.
Yeah, costume play.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. So you go as your favorite anime or video game character or comic book character or movie. There was a few like Daleks walking around and a few R2-D2s.
Stormtroopers?
Yes, there's always a female stormtrooper. At every convention, there was always a female stormtrooper.
Slave how do you tell the difference?
Yeah, how would you tell?
Her
have they got little buns in their hair or something
different.
Like that?
No, the armor is a very female
different shape.
Armor. Yes, different shape. A little more bulbous. But
ergonomically designed.
Is it still white or have they changed colours on them?
It's still white.
Oh, okay.
Yes, still white. Okay. But there's always one somewhere.
They talk with a different inflection in their voice, different...
Somewhat, yes.
Yeah. That's how you tell.
Yeah.
I was wondering.
I really like going to conventions like this because they had the Rock Band stage set up where everyone could go and play Rock Band and pretend to be a musician for a little while. And you'd get to see really introverted people who probably can't even look you in the eye when they talk to you. Not everyone, but some of them were very shy. Get up on stage and be a star for 15 minutes. It was really, really good.
Well, that's probably good in a lot of respects because I would imagine that people who spend a lot of time in front of computers and in rooms playing games and writing software and editing television programs, all those sort of things, traditionally could lose the skill of communicating because this happened in Japan many years back when the telephonic revolution came through. People just didn't know how to communicate face-to-face. And I guess conventions like this, you would see this transition, I guess, from people becoming quiet and introvert, just walking around looking at things and give them a games console and a stage and off they go.
Yeah, it was people were wearing badges with their Twitter names on them. And
oh, that's
people,
cool.
Yeah, so people were sort of introducing themselves to people they'd known online for sometimes years and they're, you know, meeting in the flesh for the first time. And it's really good getting a whole bunch of like-minded people together in the same room and watching hilarity ensue.
Were there any QR codes there for people to get a quick zap of
I didn't see any.
No?
No, I didn't see any QR codes, but that doesn't mean they weren't there. It just means I wasn't paying attention.
Very good.
But no, it was fantastic.
So what did you come away with it? From it with? Did you think, oh, this is a really vibrant indie world, we're going to see a lot more of this? Or
yes, I was very excited about the Indie Games Room.
Yeah.
I came home with about 50 business cards and a newfound respect for convention organisers because this was really, really well organised. It was really fantastic. It made Supernova look like it was run by chimps. It was just so impressive. So
there were bananas
impressive.
There. No?
No, but it was just really well organised. Everything was, and it made everyone have more fun and relax, and everything was just seamless.
Good job, Adelaide.
Yeah.
Well done, Adelaide. So what's next on the cards for you?
Free play.
Free play? More of the same, or is it a little different?
No, it's
different flavour?
Very different flavour. Yeah, this one's for the game creators themselves more so than the game's fans.
Okay, and when is this?
August 21st and 22nd.
Okay, so you've got a month here before you go up there and do that. That'd
but
be
I'm
good.
An associate producer this year, so I've got lots of work to do before then.
Good girl.
But no, it should be great. And I think AvCon may be my new favourite convention.
Oh, really?
Ooh, that's a big call.
Cool.
And I think I might not miss next year, no matter what.
Oh,
it's in the calendar already, is it?
It's in my calendar.
Excellent. Yeah. All right, Adelaide, hang on to that one. And back with more after this. Hello, everybody. Because you don't believe man walked on the moon, did you?
No, it was all done on the soundstage.
Shut up, Dr. Ron. It's not.
Look, approve an R18 rating, or we're going to reform the way we do everything.
The road is now 2.4 metres from where the map says the road is.
That's flagpole for you.
Oh, Andrew.
So Mr. Zuckerberg is certainly...
Nonsense.
Entertaining.
I very much enjoy it. I think it's very funny.
Informative.
It used to be cool.
Independent.
I gave up Warcraft for you, Lena. What else do you want me to do? You're going to bring me to my knees.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
During the break, Mark was asking Lena, why are the games dearer over here compared to in the United States?
Because That's the way it's always been, so they can get away with it.
Is it because that's the Apple mentality? We can charge extra $100
no,
over here.
No, it's not. Stop it.
It is.
Too much Apple hate today.
No.
The foot is down. The foot is down. You're not to say Apple.
Might well be down. Just Dr. Ron checking.
Apple. Foot's down.
All right. Well, let's talk about.
Can I just ask a quick, just follow up question to that? Why can't we buy from, say, Walmart and have it shipped here or, you know, somewhere else overseas that ends up cheaper? Because Walmart won't do that because there's some rules about how they're.
I think there might be import technicalities, but it's also probably a region locking thing. You probably can't play the discs on our consoles because of the region that they're.
But the PS3 is an unlocked device when it comes to games. So you can get any game anywhere in the world and play it.
Yes, somewhat. Yes. Yes.
Well, no, there's
not the Xbox, that's right. I knew one of them. I just had to double check.
No. Therefore, that Mark's question is valid. Why can't you get a PS3 game from Walmart and get it shipped?
A lot of people do import games for cheaper from other places, but it's a bit hit and miss sometimes. And it's a bit, you might run into problems with updates or that sort of thing. Mm. But most of the time, a lot of people do.
Did you bring a PS3 back from
PlayAsia
the States? I did too.
Yeah. Oh, I took your lead.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Mine works a treat. The kids love it. It's one of the best things I've bought, I think, the PS3. And not from a games point of view.
No. Oh, you know, it's my Play TV, is my personal VV. What do you call it?
PVR.
PVR, that's
the word. Does it record? No, you can get an actual option for it that makes it do that, can't you?
Yeah, so that's what I've got, the Play TV. Yeah. It works really well. I've got the games from overseas, got the games from here. As you say, the only thing it doesn't do is play Australian DVDs. Blu-rays are good.
Yeah, the DVDs, it just doesn't know about region encoding and all that sort of stuff. But other than that, it's been pretty good from...
Oh, wrapped with it, you know. It's
been, and it even picks up iView and does all those sort of good things.
Yeah, got the 3D.
I think you do Netflix on it as well if you try hard enough.
I nearly signed up for it the other day.
Did you?
And, oh, I don't know if I should do this and my internet connection. So.
Oh, dear. Well, 3D TV prices are coming down in Australia considerably. All the manufacturers are getting onto the bandwagon. And I think its novelty phase has sort of passed a little bit. We did some stuff with LG the other day. They got really nice 3D TVs at the moment. And they're the first manufacturer to have the passive glasses as opposed to the active ones where you've got to have the batteries and the big heavy things that give you a headache.
So their passive glasses, are they the different polarisation?
Same ones you use in the cinema.
Okay,
the circular polarised ones.
Yep.
So, but anyway, 3D TVs on the local market. They've been selling for more than a year, and the technology has been slowly getting better, and the prices have been coming down. So there's probably no better time than now. If you're thinking of a new telly, well, maybe consider the option of a 3D one with the passive glasses because they're cheap, and if you lose them, next time you're down at Village seeing the local 3D one, just pay the $3 and get another set of
glasses.
They're
only a dollar.
They're a dollar now, are they?
They're a dollar,
yeah. $1 at the movies.
Really?
Yeah,
Goes to show since when I was there.
Compared to $120 for two pairs of Sony active glasses.
I heard a very interesting thing on radio during the week, actually. Choice in Australia, which is a consumer, what are they?
A consumer advocacy group.
Yeah. They did a bit of a whip around and compared cinema prices between here being Australia.
Here in the US?
The US and New Zealand. Right, yeah. And for a family of four, two adults and two kids, we pay $30 more than what you would in the United States and $25 more than what you would pay in New Zealand.
Yep. Well, my wife was on about this because we went to the cinemas on the weekend. I heard it for 5 minutes about the difference in prices.
Just the 5 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. She was going on and on.
Are the cinemas any difference in quality between, say, a cinema in Australia and a cinema in the United States, Mark?
No.
Having lived there for some time?
Yeah, look, there's some, obviously some older cinemas as well, but no, generally no difference. They don't seem to have gold class that we have here and that sort of upmarket one. They do exist, but not to the same extent. But if you just go to the normal cinema, you pay a lot less. You know, like even a Saturday night might be busy, it might be $11, but the rest of the time it's like $8. You know, for a ticket.
For an adult. Wow.
Mm.
Hello to our New Zealand brethren, by the way, listening to Tech Talk Radio in Hawke's Bay, in the Hawke's Bay Radio Network.
Kia ora.
Magic FM. Mm.
Yeah. Lovely part of the world. And tell me, what's the candy bar like equivalent to here?
Same. Absolutely.
So it's $10 for an ice cream and a 375ml can of soft drink?
Exactly.
And then you buy the family pack for $20 and you get two.
No, it is. It's just...
Why do they do that?
A captive audience.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I reckon you did a little fast food joint next door to a cinema complex, you'd do a roaring trade, I would have thought. So. All right. Well, there you go. That said, 3D is on the way down here price-wise and probably well worth time to considering it.
Graham in the chat room is sad
about all this Sony hate. Now he finally has his beautiful Bravia.
Hang on. Where's the
Who
Sony
said
hate?
Sony?
I've got a Sony. It's He's like, got a Sony. Andrew's got a Sony.
Like
and Ron's got a Sony.
It's like Lena saying I have a problem with Apple. I've got two Apple devices.
No yeah, and you despise
we
them.
We all own a Sony TV, so come on, there's
Stop
no hate
these
in the
room. Rumours and scuttlebutt.
Lies and slander.
But you did insinuate that...
I haven't insinuated anything.
...that LG had a better 3D technology than
Sony. Oh, I like the passive technology.
Sony. Yes, that's what you're saying. Because Sony uses the active technology.
I have a 3D TV at the office. It's a Sony.
Yep.
It's a Sony.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I've got one at home.
Hopefully there'll be an LG one there too, so I can compare them side to side.
Yes, yeah. So it'd be interesting to know. If you play, Blu-ray's got a standard for 3D. We've talked about this before. So if the output comes out, does the LG TV take it okay? Because it just comes on the HDMI, recognises it's a 3D signal and then converts it okay?
I can't answer that question 100%, but I would say that the smarts would be in there because they support DLNA, which is the Digital Living Network Alliance.
Well done. Yep.
So with those protocols supported, I can't see why it wouldn't. It'd have to be a manufacturer who would be extremely arrogant to go down and create their own protocols and their own things in this modern day and age. So,
interesting. Yeah, but that's what's happening with the free-to-air stuff, isn't it? There's no standard yet for that from last I...
For what? There's no 3D on free-to-air if we're talking about that.
No, none being broadcast at the moment, but when it was, there is no standard as such.
No, I think that the trial they did was side-by-side 3D, which is supported because all the TVs support side-by-side, under, over and interlaced.
Okay.
Which are the three methods of broadcasting it. The true 3D is two projectors or two streams, but we don't have the bandwidth in this country to do those sort of things. So,
and you've probably put up with that for, you know, what it is. So if you take the 3D, you'll suffer the, you know, say it was interlaced, the slower frame rate.
Yeah.
I've been playing games in 3D on my Sony Bravia with my Sony PlayStation.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dashboard comes forward, right?
That's about it.
Yeah, good.
The HUD.
The HUD,
the heads-up display. Mm-hmm. Look, we're going to go to Odd Spot Gadget website of the week. There's lots of other things we should talk about tonight. Google continues its spring clean.
This is the mad minute.
Yeah, the mad 30 seconds, really. First came Google Health and Power Meter. Now Google Labs and Google Toolbar in Firefox have been scrapped. So Google's cleaning up all of its... You know how you go into your account setting and you see all those things there? Some of the stuff which has gone end of life, they're actually getting rid of now and doing all that sort of stuff. So they're doing their spring cleaning.
Good, good.
Google also made its first acquisition and buys social group startup Fridge, which I don't know too much about, but good to see people like Google acquiring the startups. I think it was Lena who made a point the other day when Microsoft bought Skype. I said, why didn't they go and spend the money on half a dozen or a dozen startups and actually get on the cutting edge rather than... Yeah. And speaking of Microsoft, their Xbox is doing going gangbusters. I think you mentioned this in the news, Dr. Ron, too. Quarter four earnings for 2011 went through the roof thanks to Xbox. So obviously...
Xbox
Lena, they're,
sales, yeah.
They're all playing games
well,
and things
like that. Well, when the PlayStation store was down, what else were we going to do? When Sony was down...
I'll tell you after
we
the show.
Turned on our Xboxes.
You experienced a Twitter outage the other day, just quickly.
I
remember. I
did. I've just stopped shaking.
Yeah, I know. I know. And Adam Turner jumped on Google Plus and said, at last, I've got somewhere to whinge and moan about when Twitter's down.
Is that what happened?
Mm.
Oh, good. See, I'm too busy in the day to realise what goes on. Maybe you should come to the office more often, Dr. Ron.
No, I don't think so. No. None of us will get anything done.
Absolutely. Odd Spot Gadget website the week after this.
Google has opted out of Germany now.
But that's not the whole problem.
Lena, help us. You need to come back. All is forgiven.
Yeah, what do you want? I can't deal with this now.
Absolutely.
That's very wrong.
It was very rude.
And obviously pretty good on the batteries too.
Not happy, Jan.
Oh, well. You have nothing here which does not have an Apple on it.
That's the way I like it.
Couldn't even tell her whether you were male or female.
No. Frankly. No.
Have you worked out the five-finger fondle yet?
I hate toolbars on browsers.
Yes.
That really drives me insane.
Yes.
That lacks couth as well.
That lacks complete couth.
Graham took umbrage during the week with a ranking system that I developed on the forum.
Should have known that was coming.
A good cabler is worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely.
Mm. Let's talk about Apple, shall we?
Yay.
Oh, Apple scandal.
Yeah. That's when I thought I got out. They pull me back in.
Entertaining. They post some lolcats.
No, they haven't posted any lolcats yet that I've seen.
Informative.
At some point, litigation must come to an end.
Exactly.
Independent.
I'm not queuing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
This house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Interesting!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
This week's gadget, Andrew, is RIM's BlackBerry Playbook. With an undisguised broadside of Apple and Android tablet computers, Research in Motion, makers of the BlackBerry, have released the Playbook, a tablet computer running RIM's proprietary tablet OS operating system. The standard version's got Wi-Fi 802.11, A, B, G, and N.
Oh, so everything?
Everything. But there are also versions that support WiMAX and LTE and HSDPA for your phone network.
So everything as well.
Everything as well. It's got a 7-inch LCD display with a nice resolution. It's fully HTML5 and Adobe Flash enabled. Cop that, Apple.
Yeah.
1 gigahertz.
Bring it on.
Dual core processor, 1 gig of RAM. Multitasking. Cop that, Apple. 3 meg front facing camera. 5 meg rear facing camera. Accelerometer, digital compass, gyroscope, and a USB port. Cop that, Apple. Comes in 16, 32, and 64 gig models, starting at $579 up to $799. More information at au.blackberry.com.
You said I was bad.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.thenerdmachine.com.
That's me.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, Jedis, Wookiees, Vulcans.
Tribbles, one of those, is it?
Yes, mutants and the like. The creators of the Nerd Machine hope the site will become a hub for all things nerd, from gadgets and gizmos to whoozits and whatsits galore.
Graham's tapping frantically at
he
home.
Is. The Nerd Machine
thingamabobs
brings you entertainment, news, hardware, that's software, funny, a blog, a nerd forum, videos via Ustream, and even merchandise. So have a look. It's a lot of fun. www.thenerdmachine.com.
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
This is an interesting little app. It's for iGadgets.
Yeah, I was typing it up tonight and I thought, what on earth is this?
See, I'm not a hater. This is an Apple app. It's a nice little Apple app. It's called Trimit. T-R-I-M-I-T.
We've got two Apple apps in a row now.
We have. It's an automatic text summarizer and simplifier. It's a bit difficult to explain, but I'm going to do the best
I can. Because Apple people need simplifying text.
No, not at all.
Get out!
Not at
all. Get out! Right now!
Not at all.
Sorry.
Shun.
It's in case you have, like all of us, if you have information overload, this is the app for you. Trimit utilizes a special algorithm to automatically summarize or trim text to any specified length. What it does is it identifies parts of a sentence, like verbs, adjectives, proper nouns, and numbers. It says, I'm going to need that because that's a name. I'm going to need those numbers because they're important, but I can get rid of that. That's an adjective. I can get rid of that. I can get rid of that. It condenses the text into a specified length.
So nouns and verbs only with the odd adjective.
No, it does a very, very good job. So if I was going to write a blog post, for example, with all this information, and I viewed it with Trimit,
that's what Fairfax is going to use.
Yeah, the output might be, you know, a lot shorter. It works surprisingly well. It's available for free in the iTunes store, and it's coming soon for Android. So more information at Trimit, trim-it.me. That's our app, Andrew. Trimit.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bob, James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
At the third stroke, the talking clock will be 75 years old.
Oh, wow. I thought it went ages ago.
Is someone going to go beep, beep?
Graham would if he was here.
Graham would if he was here. Yeah. In an age of laptops, smartphones and internets, British Telecom's talking clock, or speaking clock, as the Brits would have it, still receives 30 million calls every year.
Really?
At the third stroke.
We used to have one here. Telstra used to run it. We used to be 199, wasn't it?
1194. We still have a talking clock here.
Do we?
Yeah.
We should ring it one day, say good day.
Well, we could. The talking clock was introduced by British Telecom on the 24th of July 1936. Demand peaks on four very time-sensitive days every year. People want to know and to be able to celebrate New Year at precisely the right time. They like to double-check when the clocks have gone forward or backward.
Wouldn't want to be at one of their parties, could you imagine? Hang on, I'm just going to make a call.
A
ready?
British Telecom party. And they want to ensure they start their two-minute silence at exactly 11 a.m. on Remembrance Day. So they're the four times when calls peak to the service. The speaking clock was created for people who did not have a watch or a clock. Before 1936, people used to ring the exchange operator, a real person, to settle disputes over the time.
What, you'd have a wager on, I think it's 11.53. No, it's 11.54.
Let's ring the time clock. The talking clock and find out.
So did that live at GMT? Did that live on the international? No, that's the international. That's New Zealand. What's the one that goes through?
UTC.
UTC.
Well, it was GMT. It then became UTC.
Yeah.
And that's what it would have been because that's where it was based.
Okay. Because you can still go there in London and see the museum that's there. Well, they still keep time there, I think.
They do.
Yeah. So how old is it?
It's the British one, which is the original one, is 75 years old.
Do you think we're going to have much call for that? Will people still ring it in times of party?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Last year,
times of party. I like
30
that.
Million calls.
last
year. Wow. Telstra. So there's a revenue stream here.
Still
Telstra.
A big demand for it. Yeah.
Why did they ax ours then?
No, ours is still here. 1194. You can still ring it.
Oh, you can still ring it.
Yeah.
You did say that.
Is it still Telstra? It's not. It's outsourced to a private company in...
Why wouldn't it be?
It's Roy.
Okay.
And it's a computer now connected to a GPS receiver.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Gee, you learn a lot on this show, don't you?
No.
Yeah. All right, that is Tech Talk Radio for this week, today's episode. Wherever you might be listening to us, next week it'll be slightly different. We don't know what it will be either, but come along and listen and join in. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Gray might be back if he's filling over his lurgy.
Can I do one of my time travel things?
Yeah, okay, off you go. Be quick, because we're running out of time.
If you heard Tech Talk Radio on the Community Radio Network and decided to go back and download previous episodes of the show, then you've made a wise choice. Hope you've enjoyed this edition, which never made it to the Community Radio Network.
Okay. Till this time next week, I don't know what that's all about, but see you then, guys. Bye.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellist Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Guest panellist is Justin Dunlop. Expert opinion by Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and the world that rebroadcast the show. And a reminder that Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. And don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk chat, and solve your tech issues in the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.